The year that was in Jacksonville politics. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9 on the radio. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, a look back at a very busy year as we break it all down with City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri. Then later, mental health first aid, courtesy of Baptist Health. Plus, how you can avoid identity theft at the holidays. Believe it or not, it can be the most vulnerable time of the year for that. All of that ahead this morning, but first this hour, from pension and taxes to the passage of the city's human rights ordinance and more, it was a busy year on the local political scene, and the year's not over yet. There are still lots of things hanging out there to discuss. Here with his thoughts, we welcome Jacksonville City Councilman, former mayor, and school board member Tommy Hazzouri to Studio 5 to talk about it all. Councilman, good morning.
Good morning, and Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to everyone. Great year, and we are winding down, but we're winding forward, too, and moving forward.
That's right. And a quick note to all our listeners out there, we are having technical difficulties with our phones this morning, so we can't take your calls today. However, we want your emails and tweets. I can still get those on my phone, so email the show at firstcoastconnect at wjct.org or just tweet at Melissa in Jax. As we talk about the local year in politics with City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri. And a busy year for you and your colleagues on the City Council.
It was.
What do you consider the biggest issues you tackled over 2017?
The two biggest was the HRO, the Human Rights Ordinance, and the Mayor's Pension Bill. And then finally, the Kids Alliance.
The Kids Hope Alliance creation, the new agency for kids.
Correct, where we combine the Jacksonville Journey and the Jacksonville Children's Commission into 7-member board. We have 6 members already approved and 1 more still to come.
Okay, let's take these one by one. Pension reform. That was a heavy lift for the mayor and the city council.
And the city of Jacksonville.
And the city itself. But it did get done. As you look back on it, what are your thoughts?
I think at the beginning of my term, first time on the city council, 2 years ago, I was sitting with Mayor Curry and the former mayors, just chatting in general, not trying to give advice. But I did give one bit of advice. I said, Mayor, the most important thing that you need to do in your first year of your administration is to let the HRO get behind you as well as the pension bill. Otherwise, it would take up your whole first four years in office. And we did. While he didn't come out supporting the human rights ordinance, I will give him much credit for returning the bill without his signature, making the HRO expansion law almost immediately. And then, of course, the pension bill, 75% of the public voted in a referendum to support the mayor's proposal, and long past due. And now we'll get out of that big pension debt and move forward and do some things that we've got in our budget for this year to start building Jacksonville and moving Jacksonville forward.
And let's talk about that. What are the biggest budget priorities that you see for the coming year?
A lot of it has to do, and we're continuing to amend the budget. We just added more emergency ambulances at 9 different fire stations that we've been trying to do, and we've got 9 more, and then all of our fire stations will all have emergency vehicles, ambulances, if you will, and I think that's important. But the biggest that's coming forward is kind of a period right now no committee meetings, no activity.
Right, things are slowing down, sure.
But at the beginning of the year, you read about it, you see what's going on. We've got to deal with, we want to deal with downtown development. We put millions of dollars into infrastructure for all over Jacksonville in this year's budget. It was a very good budget. We had the ability this year to do things that we haven't been able to do in the past. But one of the things that really kind of, I think all of us have, and we don't yet have a handle on how the mayor is going to be making these recommendations, is the district property that you're reading about in the South Bank, is to get that developed, however that comes out. And we'll talk about that, if you will, in a few minutes. And then also the Jacksonville Landing, there's suits
going
on there.
What to do about that?
It's an eyesore to Jacksonville.
Do you think it should be sold to a new owner?
Absolutely. In all deference to Mr. Slayman, I think either the city ought to take it and redevelop it into a nice park and a great facility, or Tony needs to reinvest in the landing. I know there's a suit going on. I can't get involved with that on the air, but Tony should have the pride of that landing. That is the crown jewel for Jacksonville's downtown. It's the first thing you see in football games, and anytime they show the scene of downtown Jacksonville, it's the landing. Then you've got the JEA. That property, they want to move, they want to sell. Those issues are there in downtown development, the shipyards. We inherited a whirlwind when I took office, and we lost $18 million at the least. And so as a result, now the Kahn family is going to try to do some development there. So there's a big development going on downtown and across in the South Point area, and then housing. So there's a number of things in the development side, notwithstanding all the day-to-day things we have to do to take care of the health, safety, and welfare of the community.
Right. Let's talk about some of those development projects you mentioned. There's several to talk about. Let's begin with this development that's being planned on the South Bank next to the school board building. You used to serve on the school board. It's the vacant JEA property, that parcel that developer Peter Rummel wants to develop into a mixed-use place called The District, with apartments, retail, office space. And now we're hearing that the city may have a piece in this. And there was a meeting that was held that really was held in the shade. What are your thoughts about the future of this piece of property? And what's your knowledge about what's going on behind closed doors
My knowledge, much like that, I would dare say for all 19 council members, what we know is what we read in the paper, quite frankly, because apparently...
Is that not sitting well with the Jacksonville City Council?
I can't speak for them. Just the quotes I've seen in the paper, it doesn't sit very well with me because there's a lot of lack of transparency. And
on the part of whom?
On the part of the Downtown Investment Authority and on the part of the administration, as much
the
as they're
office.
Involved in it. Well, you said that. Yeah, I mean, it is the mayor's. I don't know how much they're involved in it. This is the first time in the past couple of weeks that we've heard about it. There may have been inkling around that others may have known about. My concern is that this property has been around for a decade. When I was on the school board, we had our own share of cleanup to do for the pollution and the intrusion in our property. And that was adjacent to the Southside Generating Plant site, which is where the JEA property is. They thought they had it sold back then after we cleaned it up. It wasn't sold. Then they finally said they're going to sell it to Rummel. And he's had it. Peter's had it for 3 years. And then all of a sudden, I don't want to call it a bailout, but it sounds like some things going on where we'll end up, you know, in ownership, and we already...
Say that again. You think the city is bailing out the district?
I can use that word as bailing out. I hope that's not the case, because they said from what I've read now, you know, to me, the secret's in the sauce, and I haven't seen that yet, and I don't think any of us have. I think what's happening is that we want to take ownership of it and then get the money back in tax dollars at a future date. They're talking in the paper about 2040 before anybody starts recovering any dollars. Well, we've done that already with the pension, 2030, before that goes into place, but we're doing okay with that. Then we've got the landing to deal with. And we've got the shipyards to deal with. Thank God that now Mr. Kahn's going to go in there and do some development. It's going to be piece by piece, I assume. But all this stuff about the JEA giving it or selling it or whatever they're going to do, we don't really know. To the city, and the district will come in, and I don't know how they'll participate. I don't know where the JEA will be. And at the same time, it's like a pylon on a football field. At the same time, I'm looking at the JEA talking about maybe selling the JEA, or before that, swapping land from their old building, or building a new building, or swapping with the back of the federal courthouse where we own property there. So who's going to own what? Who's going to move where? What's going to happen to the district? All of these questions, I'm sure, will be settled in the next month or two. And it's going to take a lot of explanation on the part of the administration, the JEA, and especially the DIA.
The Downtown Investment Authority.
Exactly.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Jacksonville City Councilman and former Mayor Tommy Hazzouri about the biggest stories of the year in local politics. We can't take your calls today, unfortunately, due to a technical glitch. So tweet the show at Melissa N. Jax and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Here's an email for you from Jim. What does Councilman Hazzouri think the chances are that the council will vote to sell JEA, say to Florida Power and Light? That's been discussed among JEA board members.
You know, that issue's been around a number of years. I have not seen the council auditor's report, but we know that the first thing you can think of is that the rates are going to go up. We have to always be cognizant of how the taxpayer, whether it's the landing, whether it's the JTA, whether it's the electric authority deal with the district or whatever it might be, it's got to be good and it's got to be measurable and it's got to be a savings for the taxpayer. If we don't benefit, then it's not a done deal. As far as the JEA being sold, that's an old saw that you've heard forever and ever. I worry about the only one who would benefit from that to me right now would be the school board, because we don't get any property taxes result from the JEA that I've been wanting for years to come from the JEA in their share like they do with the city. But more importantly it's a quandary really for the JEA's got three or four things. It's like a whack-a-mole out there trying to figure out which one's going to hit the wall and stick. And I didn't say the word, but you
whack-a-mole?
Know, well, no, I said that word, the whack-a-mole. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about it's like almost we're throwing things against the wall and hope that something's going to stick. Mm-hmm. Well, it's with the JEA, the landing. And I know something will, but it's got to be positive. The mayor said that over and over again. It's got to be measurable. It's got to be good for the taxpayers. And I'm hoping that he's sticking to that.
So do you think the votes would be there to vote to sell off the utility?
I don't even think we'll ever get to that point.
You don't think you'll ever get to that point?
No. I think that.
Will the votes be there on this district deal?
That is going to be a very, very, they're going to have to give us, I guess what's concerning me, that we know nothing about what's going on over there. And I don't like the secretiveness of it. And maybe that's the way you do deals, like when you're trying to get an Amazon to come here. No one knows. They sit without transparency. And maybe that's the way you're supposed to do things. But it smells. It's not good for the council members who ultimately have to vote for it, the JIA who has to ultimately vote for it, the administration who has to approve it. I don't like the secretiveness of it, and I think that that's wrong. But hopefully maybe that'll clear itself out in the next month or two. But
do you think that
I think it'd be difficult
other
for them
colleagues
to,
of yours on the council share that suspicion of this?
Well, I can't speak for them.
Matter?
I do see the quotes that are in the paper by Mr. Schellenberg and Mr. Gulliford. Mr. Schellenberg was pretty forthright about his feelings initially on it. He's our liaison to the JEA. Each of the councilmen have a relationship. I'm doing the library, the police, et cetera, and the school board. And Gulliford says it sounds convoluted. I can't speak for him. None of us have seen the plan per se, and nobody's talked to us about it. What I don't want is someone bringing it to me and telling me how important it is to get it passed tomorrow. And that's not going to happen. You know, we've got to know exactly what the plan is, who's going to benefit, and how will it benefit the taxpayers of Jacksonville.
You're a former mayor and school board member.
And a legislator.
And a legislator. You've held all these offices.
A part of all I've met.
And you are the at-large councilman who was the highest vote getter, by the way, when you were elected to the city council that night. In that election cycle, you got more votes than anyone on the ballot.
That was nice, and I thank the people for that.
You're a Democrat, and you have a lot of seniority and institutional knowledge and experience in your current role, and there have been times when you've squared off against this current mayor who's a Republican. How would you characterize your relationship with the current Mayor Curry at this time?
I respect the office of the mayor. I know what he goes through. I knew what John Delaney did, what John Payton did, what Alvin Brown did, and am Godbo before that and Ed Austin. I respect that office. And quite frankly, Lenny and I have a very good relationship. Generally, his issues are my issues. The same concern. Now, if it gets down to party lines, I haven't seen that yet. I'm not saying that's not going to happen. And I think he knew when at the beginning of the administration, for me and for him, he was taking a lot of people off who were Democrats off of the boards and commissions for no reason, but he wanted to put his people on. He said that he thought they would do a better job. And we got into a little squabble over that. But, you know, we respect each other enough to move on and move forward because all of us are interested in what's good for Jacksonville. And that's what it's all about. And I do have probably one of the best relationships with the mayor today than many of the councilmen.
What do you talk about mostly when you talk to him?
When I talk to him, just about the future and, you know, football. You know he likes football. And I'm, you know, I was there, Jake Godbole and I both were bringing a National Football League here 25, 26 years ago and took a lot of work. We were always the bridesmaid. Now we're the—
What do you think about the Jaguars making it to the playoffs?
It's called Heart Attack City, I tell you. I see the enthusiasm at the ball games. We haven't missed a game in 25 years, my wife and I. And
25 years. You've been going to every
Every day we're in the same seats, yes.
Wow.
It's a big investment, but, you know, it's great for Jacksonville. And if you like football, it's great for a football fan. And it's had its highs and lows, obviously. This year is a great year for Jacksonville, for the Jaguars. I hope we go all the way.
Are you going to travel to games if they keep rocking along?
Absolutely. I don't have much money personally. People think former mayors are rich and all, but I tell you, that's an investment that I want to see continue for the city because it is the one single factor, I think, that gives Jacksonville a head start on many, many, many projects that would come to Jacksonville. They recognize our city, and the more they come here, the more they like it.
How do you rate Jaguars owner Shad Khan in terms of his civic engagement and everything he's doing on the private development side? You mentioned the Shipyards project.
He is an outstanding businessman. It's not cheap to own a football team. I was listening the other day about the Carolina Panthers being sold, and one of the lady who's the vice president, I think, of ESPN was talking about it's not enough to have $1 billion. You have to start off with that, but it's the investment afterwards and what you're going to do. And Shad Khan has demonstrated to me not only did he buy a football team that's doubled in value, or maybe almost tripled since he bought it 5 years ago, but he's also investing in our city with the arena, and it's a public-private partnership with the not just with the arena, rather with Daly's Place, mm-hmm. and with what he wants to do at the Shipyards. And he's a partner, Jay. He lives in Naples. He has his business in the Midwest, and he's invested in this city, and he's committed to this city. And all these things of the past, Jacksonville, going to move, are we going to sell, blah blah blah. That's history, and it was a lot of it was rumor. But I think we've demonstrated it's hard to believe that we've been here 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like yesterday we were over there praying that we could get a team.
Because it almost – didn't it almost not happen at a certain point?
St. Louis. St. Louis was – and I think actually Khan wanted to buy that one if they were going to put it in St. Louis.
The Rams, yeah.
And the Rams at the time, yeah. Didn't happen. They didn't want to build a stadium. They didn't want to do whatever was required of them at the time. Now they've lost a team, but...
Do you worry that we'll lose this team?
No, not at all.
You don't worry about that?
No, not at all. Look, our attendance, we hold 65,000 in that stadium, notwithstanding the Georgia-Florida game where you can put 10 more thousand seats in there. In the last two games, it's been over 64,000 capacity, sold out, standing room only. It's not always that way, but we get an average of about 61,000 at the game. Imagine that with the losses that we've had the last several years. This city is committed to a successful football team, obviously, but to having an NFL team here. To lose that, it was like when I was mayor. The one thing I didn't want to have, two things, a riot and losing the Florida-Georgia game. If I were the mayor today, it'd be the same thing, only you'd add the Jaguars.
Oh, interesting. Now, how many more months do you have in your council term?
2 years.
Two years. And what's Tommy Hazzouri going to do at that point?
If I'm alive, I'll be running. You know, it's you have to take it I'm the second senior next to Bill Gulliford, and he leaves. We kid each other that we were here when the 1901 fire occurred. but then you can add Jake Godbold to that, too. Uh-huh. No, it's my intention to run.
You'll run for council again?
I haven't. Yeah, I'm not interested. Each job that I've taken has been for public service that I could make a contribution to. Education, I chaired the committee in the legislature. Education, my wife teaches, my son teaches. It was always something that was very important to me and to our success as a city. Legislature, mayor the same way, getting rid of the tolls. I had projects that I wanted to do, get rid of the smell, do some things for this city that would make a difference so we could have a football team, so we could bring other businesses here. And on the city council, the HRO was my number one priority. We fought hard for that prior to me getting there. And thanks to people like, I don't want to say yourself, Melissa, but others in the community, the nonprofits, it was needed and necessary for this city to move forward. And not one problem had occurred before, nor after this has passed. And so I think the city of Jacksonville, there's some out there who would like to rescind that, but shame on them. Let's move forward and treat everybody the way we want to be treated.
Jacksonville politician Jay Fant, who's running for attorney general, he has put forth a proposal that would essentially negate local protections like the HRO. Well, what are your thoughts about that? Because the it's not seen as likely to pass, but still the legislature could potentially pass something that would override a local ordinance.
That's a good reason why he's not going to get elected, too. I didn't know that Jay was doing that. His father and I have been friends for years. I'm not going to speak to what Jay's doing. There's a number of people in the legislature. Look, they're trying to get rid of the ability for local governments to have tree ordinances. And look at the referendums we've had. And there are two legislators in South Florida on both sides of the
– And that's drawn a lot of bipartisan opposition, the tree thing.
Even the developers here in Jacksonville will tell you that we like the tree ordinance we have. It enhances the value of the homes. It certainly gives an addition to our quality of life in Jacksonville. And we fought hard with referendums. We passed the first trust fund back when I was mayor for trees. And it's not about tree huggers. It's about tree lovers who want to see their city beautiful and keep it that way with our ocean, with our rivers, with our streams. And that's the other thing I didn't mention, the St. John's River. We have concentrated, and we're going to be moving forward on that in a very positive way that's going to be more than just a river. It is going to be our national treasure.
And what are you going to be doing?
We're going to have not just more boat slips, but for kayaking, for recreation use. We want it to be taken advantage of. There's parts of the river it's difficult to do because of the currents, but we want to see activity on the water, and we want to respect the St. John's and keep it clean. That's why I've had some difficulties with some of the port dredging that they're doing out there. I want to make sure that they make sure that when they dig, that they're not drill baby drilling, you know, that it's going to be clean water and we're going to be able to preserve the quality of water.
What about the proposed dredging project?
That's what I'm talking about.
Are you against that?
I'm not against the dredging. I think money-wise, I don't know they're going to make any more or less from what I've seen than they're doing now. However, competition is out there, and that's what they're looking at, Brunswick, Charleston, all
Savannah. Do you think that the port is pursuing the correct course of action to move ahead with dredging the river deeper?
I do think that, of course, they're moving forward. My concern, and I've asked them, and they're doing it, is give me a quarterly report or give the council a quarterly report on monitoring the river as we dredge, to making sure the intrusion is not going to damage our river and our water quality here in Jacksonville.
The environmental groups are suing, saying it will cause damage.
And that's why I can't get involved. They put $3 million into cleaning it up. That's not enough. I think, though, there are billions of dollars being proposed, I think, and I have some numbers that the city sent to Bradley, really, from Fleming Island, recently appointed the appropriations chair. And he's introduced a bill that would lead the state in spending at least, require the state to spend at least $75 million a year in spring projects, our springs like Silver Springs and others, and $50 million annually on projects related to restoration of the St. John's River. So he's committed. We need to make sure that that's, you know, like cleaning the air and getting rid of the tolls, the river.
Speaking of the
river,
let me ask you one more question here. During Hurricane Irma and after Hurricane Irma, we saw historic flooding in this community. A follow-up report on that, actually from the Tampa Bay Times, found that Officials had been sounding the alarm about our risk for that type of flooding here in Jacksonville for many years, and we were unprepared. And in the aftermath of the floods, critics have said the city is still unprepared for that type of problem to happen again, that we're not doing enough to mitigate and plan for that type of storm surge. What are your thoughts about that?
I read that article, and I saw a quote from me from Christmas past that wasn't even applicable, and it wasn't something I had said as mayor, really. And I said, where'd this guy come from? I said, they'll be worried about all their sinkholes that they have in the Tampa area. No city's ever started criticizing another city. We have properties in Jacksonville, San Marco being a prime example, that's bid on, that's built on swampland, quite frankly, and other areas are low. And we've always taken precaution and taken action on trying to improve any drainage problems, any flooding problems that we had. When I was mayor, I think it was Sam Musa that told me, he says, any city, and he's an engineer, Sam Musa is a CAO for the city, said that any city that would have those kinds of rains and that kind of weather are going to be subject to flooding. And I agree with that. When I was mayor, we had, besides the good snow we had at Christmas, we had an 11-inch rain. We lost two people. We didn't lose anybody in this hurricane because they thought that the ponds on the west side were part of the street and turned right into the water and drowned. And that was because of the heavy flooding that we had out there. But that was something that you couldn't alleviate, and even today. But I think we're putting.
We could plan for that kind of storm surge again. It would, and we could do a better job of protecting these vulnerable neighborhoods. It would just cost a lot of money.
And they're doing that, and they're trying to buy some of those houses as well as on these floodplains, so they can address those issues. John Pappas, who heads Public Works, and the administration has put a lot of money into addressing our flooding concerns, and they are there. They're going to always be around, unfortunately, but we can minimize it, and I think that's what we're trying to do.
Okay, here's another tweet for you from Chris. Does the councilman support getting the Jacksonville Armada a downtown stadium? Would the fairgrounds be a better use for that?
That's a double-loaded question.
Yes, it is.
First, for the Armada, it has to succeed. They're not going to build a stadium. I couldn't support a facility for the stadium until they're even ever, really, if they, and I love the Armada, it's just whether or not, or having any sports team here that's professional, they can use a number of facilities today. Now, the other side of that question is the fairgrounds. I think it should be moved. They want an arm and a leg for it, I think around $40 million. I forget what they want. And
what's a fair price for that parcel? Right across from the arena.
Stadium in the arena. I think it's a, I don't know what the fair price would be. That's whoever wants to, whatever they can get is what the fair price is. They need to be in an area. I haven't seen a lot of success, and I know I'm going to probably get some calls from the fair people. This past year, they had two or three shootings over there afterwards. It didn't look like it was getting a lot of people there. I'd like to see, if we're going to have a fair, I want it to be, and it's become more agricultural than the entertainment side, you know, more than the rides and all. But I love fairs, and I think it's good for our city. Clay County does a great job mm-hmm. with theirs. We do a great job with what we have, but I think that they need to move that location.
Where to? Where would the fairgrounds go?
They'll have to, you know, it could be a number of places in Jacksonville. I'm not going to pick it out. You got the Equestrian Center, that location at Cecil Field. It's got to be convenient to people, too. But look at Clay County where theirs is. I mean, it's where they have a lot of activity gathered around there. And I think that, you know, we could do the same thing. I mean, at one point I was pushing for an urban zoo downtown Jacksonville in addition to what we have out there so people could see it on a daily basis and not have to drive all the way to Hurricane. We've got one of the finest zoos in the country today. I just wish that property can be used for other things. And I think in the future it will be because that's the direction of the growth of downtown. Toward the east side by the stadium, by the arena, by the A. Philip Randolph is going to be viable again. And it's just going to take time to see it happen. I wish it could be overnight because you see all these beautiful renderings in the paper of what the district's going to look like, what the shipyard is going to look like. what the landing should be looking like. And we've made some great headway, and it's not cheap. But I think right now we are a competitor, whether it's for Amazon, which will be very difficult to get. But I think we're doing a good job when you're comparing it to 200 and some odd other cities. But if you don't try, you know, look how long we worked to bring the football team here. Some things are very hard to get, and it's very competitive. But that's what it is with cities today, is competition. Keeping Maxwell House here when I was mayor, we were fighting Hoboken, New Jersey. I didn't know they had it. They were going to either
Hoboken,
go there.
Hoboken, New Jersey wanted Maxwell House?
I know. Isn't that they had the only other one, other facility like ours.
Can you use your influence to let us peek inside there? In all the years I've been working here and driving by that factory every day, it's like Willy Wonka's factory. Nobody ever seems to walk in or walk out. I don't know what's going on with that. Just curious.
If we have time, I will tell you. A year or two ago, before I was elected, or maybe right afterwards, to the city council. And I had done, you know, we had been through it when we were trying to keep them here. You remember, keep Max and Jax was our big thing. We had hundreds of employees over there. It was great for the city. We still have hundreds, but not as many. But Kraft bought it. It's like Fort Knox to get in that place.
Yeah, it is.
It took Crescent Benny a couple of years to get in there, Councilman Crescent.
It's tough if he had trouble getting in.
And me.
He's not the most shy, retiring person.
And I went in there, and I said, what's going on? I said, you know, and then I want to know what they contribute to the city. It's a great, you know, that's a smell of real,
coffee aroma in the mornings.
And it's a great facility. It's been here, you know, the Chicory family from 1900s started that. The local family here, and Maxwell House bought it. So that's a lot of history. They're going to talk about institutional knowledge, and they used to live in Riverside. But getting in there and Kraft, and then they were getting a new manager there. And so finally, my former aide and I got in there, and it is a jaunt. It's a very big facility. And they need to have more involvement in the community. I asked them why they don't. We were going to have tables outside so people could have coffee on the way to the games and things of that nature. I just want them to participate. But, you know, when you're owned by outside of the city, and even though it's big and local as far as we're concerned, it's hard to get them involved. I love them being here. I want them to stay here. I just want them to participate.
Well,
in the
you're
community.
The definition of involved, and so we could keep talking, but we do have a few more guests waiting. It's been always great to have you sharing your thoughts. And by the way, some news-making thoughts I think you'll see on our website later today about the year that was in Jacksonville. So City Councilman Tommy Hazuri, a pleasure, and have a great holiday.
And for all the audience, thank you for electing me, for those who did and for those who didn't. Shame on you. No. Dilly dilly to the pits of misery. Nah, I love that commercial. But
why is that not a surprise?
quite frankly, I do appreciate it. And I love serving Jacksonville, whether you voted for me or not, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. There are no Democrat, Republican potholes in our city.
That's right.
It's
well,
about
thanks for being here so
Thank
much.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
And we'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
On Secrets of the Dead.
This is how America started.
By the time Jamestown was founded, St. Augustine was a community of 120 shops and homes.
Pedro Menendez and the people that went with him, they are really the fathers of the United States.
East and West Florida have been written out of the historical narrative.
Secrets of Spanish Florida on Secrets of the Dead.
Tuesday night at 9 on WJCT Public Television.
Make an appointment with Public Radio's favorite family doc on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health. It'll be a jam-packed hour on healthy living, including this recipe for
mocktails, cocktails without the booze.
We always have a great time, so will you on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX.
Sundays at 5 on 89.9 WJCT.
Folk, blues, jazz, R&B, country, western, Americana. It's all acoustic and it's all in one place. And that one place is String Theory. And you can hear String Theory Friday nights at 11 p.m. only on 89.9 WJCT. String Theory, the very best of modern acoustic music. This and every Friday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Baptist Health, which full disclosure is an underwriter on this program, is excited about reaching an important milestone. Training thousands of citizens as part of their free mental health first aid program that they offer to the community to help average citizens recognize signs of mental illness so that they can intervene and provide help. This initiative is a joint effort between Baptist, Brooks Rehabilitation, May, St. Vincent's Healthcare, and UF Health. Now, they've recently exceeded their one-year goal as they work toward training 10,000 community members in just 3 years. With more about mental health first aid, we welcome Terry Andrews, PhD, Administrator for Baptist Behavioral Health, and Carol Whitefield, RN, an instructor who's board certified in holistic nursing for the Mental Health First Aid Training Course. Did I get that right? All right, yes, ladies, good yes. morning and welcome. Terry Andrews, let's begin with you. First off, kudos. This is a big milestone, especially considering that we are ranked one of the lowest metropolitan areas in the country when it comes to funding mental and behavioral health treatment. So this effort by Baptist and others is so important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Good morning. I would even add that just even in Northeast Florida, we are the second lowest funded within the state to provide mental health resources.
Exactly. And Florida is one of the lowest funded in the country, which is why I said we're at the bottom of the bottom.
Yeah. And, you know, this couldn't be more timely. In 2016, The hospitals here in Northeast Florida conducted a community health needs assessment, also referred to as the 2016 China Study. And number one across every single survey in Northeast Florida was the need for mental health resources.
Right.
And so with the partnership of the other four hospitals in the Northeast Florida region, we are tasked with training 10,000 residents. And one by 2019, and one of the things that we've already got ahead of the game is hundreds of JSO officers have already taken the first step, and they're they've already gone through this free 8-hour course.
Let's learn a little bit more about how this works. Carol Whitefield, our RN and instructor, if someone wants to participate in this free mental health first aid training, it's like, you know, people have gone through regular first aid courses, so they might be familiar from that. How does this work and what will people learn? What will they gain?
Okay. Thank you, Melissa. Actually, what the participants learn is the risk factors and warning signals for mental health and substance use problems. They get information on depression, anxiety, trauma, psychosis, and substance use. And it's there's actually a 5-step action plan to help someone who is developing a mental health problem or who is in crisis. And so this allows us to start the conversation and to have students learn what is available, what the resources are in our area, and to look at the evidence-based professional and peer self-help resources that we offer at Baptist.
Sure. So if someone's been through a first aid class, they know what to do if they see someone having a heart attack or choking, how to administer the Heimlich maneuver. What will be some practical tools people in this class will learn after they graduate from it, and then they're out in the community and they see someone in some sort of distress that is clearly mental health based, not physical health based?
That's a great question. The first aid action plan, there's actually an acronym that that we use called ALGI. And so we start with assess for risk of suicide or harm. Very important.
Yeah.
Then we want to listen non-judgmentally. We want to give them reassurance and information. We want to encourage them to seek professional help. And we want to encourage self-help and other support strategies. And so they will learn that action plan for each of the different situations, either psychoses or substance use. All of those have an action plan, and they will learn those in the class.
And have you heard back from graduates that are putting their training into action after they've gone through the course?
Yeah.
Actually, I had someone tell me recently that they took the class on a Friday, and by Tuesday, they had started using some of the things that they learned in the class. So it is very applicable to the everyday situations that you come in contact with, and very important.
What would be some situations that maybe all of us at one point or another have come into contact with someone? What would be an example?
Well, what we know is that at least 25% of the population will experience some sort of mental health or behavioral health issue in their lifetime. And so it can be somebody that you know, may be going through a tough time, experience some depression, maybe having thoughts of hopelessness, or feeling that it's really tough for them to kind of get through their day. Also, anxiety is a big component. A large population could have some anxious systems or anxious symptoms, maybe feelings of worrying, difficulty, problem solving, getting through the day as well.
Okay.
Any other?
And so then at the holidays in particular, this is something that a lot of people are struggling with. Carol, how can people be part of this class in the future? Because as I said, your overall goal is to train 10,000 community members in 3 years. You've already exceeded your first year goal. You're coming up on your 1 year anniversary, and you've already trained nearly 3,400 people. That's past your first year goal. So I'm sure a lot of people out there listening right now would like to be part of this and take advantage of this.
Absolutely. We really hope they will. This is set up for the layperson, and so it's easy to sign up for a course, and you simply can do that by going to jacksmentalhealth.org and signing up. The course is free. As Terry said, it's an 8-hour course, and it's so worthwhile. I so encourage people to do that.
And they'll do it right on site at Baptist?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's a wonderful initiative, and it's so badly needed because, as we have been talking about, this area is one of the lowest funded in the state in terms of treatment and programs and support for mental and behavioral health issues. And Florida is the 49th or 50th state in the country when it comes to funding and awareness around mental and behavioral health. Thousands and thousands of folks around the community are struggling with this, and they need help. So this is one way that any citizen can be part of the solution and take advantage of this free mental health first aid training class, a one-day class. You take it at the downtown Baptist Health location. You just register at jacksmentalhealth.org. Hey, and you could even register someone for them and give it to them as a holiday gift. So what about that?
It's a great idea.
So thank you so much, Terry Andrews, PhD administrator at Baptist Health, Carol Whitefield, RN, instructor board certified in holistic nursing for the mental health first aid training course. Ladies, have a great holiday, and thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
It is the holiday season. In a moment, while you're making merry, you also need to protect against identity theft. We'll tell you about that right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
The saga continues. time for the Jedi to end.
Star Wars Episode 8 had a box office opening that was out of this world, but some critics say it left a bit to be desired, especially since Episode 7 set the bar so high. Our movie club reviews Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Robert Siegel, who has been hosting All Things Considered for 30 years and will be retiring in January. We'll look back on his radio career and hear how he sounded on his first NPR broadcast in 1976. And our TV critic, David Bianculli, talks with us about his picks for the best TV shows of the year. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
But here's the thing. This nerd wanted me to kiss her tonight. She had her hand on my thigh. She's got her face close to mine. She's looking into my eyes. I mean, she's doing everything but saying, kiss me, stupid. But I can't. You know, I'm saving myself for New Year's.
Join us for true stories about planning and not planning for the holidays. That's next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX. Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Do you alphabetize your spice rack? Do you solve crossword puzzles in pen? Then you will love NPR's Ask Me Another, an entire hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia.
Sundays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, online shopping will generate some $50 billion this year. And of course, at this time of year, plenty of us are doing it. But you need to know that identity theft tends to rise during the holidays. You need to make sure you're not a victim, because each time you do an online transaction, there is a small risk of identity theft. Jacksonville attorney John Phillips has some tips now on how to make your shopping more secure. And John, I worry about this too. I always have a little bit of a concern because I buy stuff online like everybody else.
Everybody does. And it's sad that it's 'tis the season for fraud and thieves to take advantage of people exercising more activity.
Yeah. So what can we do short of not buying anything online at all, which I know some people do because they're paranoid about this? What can we do to protect our identities?
It starts with some common sense and just thinking things through. So many people use impulse to shop, and you can't do that. You just slow it down, and we've got some tips for you mm-hmm. to try to just minimize the exposure that you're putting your private information, credit card information, social security numbers, passwords, and information that you don't want to get in the hands of a thief.
The biggest thing is never give anyone your social security number.
Obviously.
That's obviously number one.
And, you know, the tips we have run the gamut from email to phone calls to credit cards to websites. But, you know, even when your mortgage company calls you, sometimes they ask you for information to verify it's you. I'm like, I always say, well, if you called me, then you know you called me, and I'll be happy to call you back. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with the phone, you know, the IRS doesn't call you, right? If your credit card company is calling to verify a charge, you can say yes or no as to whether that charge was valid or mm-hmm. I need to get online and look. But if you start saying, okay, here's my credit card number, here's my social security number to verify my identity, you're exposing that information.
Sure. Now, every IT person I know, too, says that you need to protect your online identity with strong and difficult passwords, but very few of us actually do that.
We don't. It's the days of password being your password need to stop.
And that needs to stop.
And also where you log in. Now, I'm sure the WJCT Wi-Fi is probably pretty safe, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're in Starbucks or you're in public spheres, you know, you want to be careful about entering passwords, credit card information, because that's not safe. Just wait till you get to a secure Wi-Fi. Even at our law firm, we've got a system available to the public and a system available to our employees, because it works both ways, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody can go in and do damage, or somebody on the back end can do damage. And you just need to be smart. If you're sitting having a cup of coffee and want to make a purchase, maybe give them a call.
Right, right. Any other tips? And by the way, you can learn more at John's website, knowthelawyer.com. Anything else people need to know this holiday?
One thing that's really up are the credit card skimmers, and that's it's hard these days sometimes to determine what, you know, a skimmer is the a little machine that sits kind of inside or over where you put your credit card in an ATM machine or a gas pump. And a lot of them, you can kind of wiggle and tell whether that's a real mm-hmm. credit card machine or a skimmer. Mm-hmm. And so you want to be careful with that. We highly recommend you use your credit card and not your debit card, because credit card companies will stand by you, will reverse fraudulent charges. And if you use a debit card, that money's gone. And it's kind of your burden to prove it to get your money
back. That's right. That's right.
And the credit card, at least temporarily, you're kind of spending house money, their money.
So when you buy those holiday gifts online, just use a credit card, not a debit card.
Use a credit card. Try to avoid public Wi-Fi. And just be smart. You know, we're in the day and age where even credit monitoring systems are being hacked.
Exactly. No, who's watching the watchers here? That's another concern.
It is. And so we want this to be a happy holiday for everybody, and just using a little common sense and not rushing financial decisions or putting yourself at prey for fraud is a key.
Great tips, timely ones too. Go to knowthelawyer.com for more. He's Jacksonville attorney John Phillips. And on a more personal note, you were one of many people who suffered flood damage during Irma. You told me a minute ago you're hoping to move back into your home in the spring, so that's good news to hear for you personally.
It is great news. We actually bought a tree this week. We were late because I had a Christmas party. And it was fun to walk the streets of downtown carrying a 6-foot tree. I felt a little, you know.
You're staying
rural.
Downtown for now, yeah.
Yeah, we're staying in a condo downtown, and it was so great to walk down the streets of downtown with this, you know, beautiful Christmas tree. But you know, we'll get back to our green grass. Adjusting to downtown life is fantastic. The downtown ambassadors have been wonderful, and it's great to see. You know, it's great to see how vibrant downtown's becoming.
Well, enjoy the holidays downtown, and best wishes for the new year. And thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. The unimpeachable Kevin Merchard is our producer. The serene and majestic Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. Musical genius Pyotr Chevchik of the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra composed our show theme. 1A's up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be back tomorrow with our final show of 2017, our media roundtable year in review. That's tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.